This is Fresh Air. I'm Frank Browning. South of the equator, so the saying goes, there is no sin. When anthropologist Richard Parker first went to Brazil, he supposed he'd find a village somewhere along the Amazon, watch the natives, and write about them. But pretty soon, he found himself in Rio, and he realized that sex and the city were far more compelling topics, both personally and professionally, than Aboriginal life in the forest. 10 years later, Parker still lives in Rio, and he's published his first book about sexuality in Brazil. It's called Bodies, Pleasures, and Passions. And in it, he argues that sexuality, even what's gay and what's straight, is not the same the world over.
In popular culture in Brazil, and for men and women from the popular classes, the very category of homosexual and heterosexual, those categories don't even really exist. They're medical scientific categories that the educated elite may use, but that are very rarely used by people from the popular sectors.
So tell me how these labels work out. I mean, if it's not homosexual, heterosexual, what is it?
Well, a man who performs the active role in sex with another man...
the man who's the penetrator.
Exactly. Doesn't necessarily consider himself to be any different from any other man. He's performing his typical male role. He's being active just like he would in sexual relations with a woman, right? And the culture doesn't classify or label him as being different because of that behavior. Now, on the contrary, a man who performs the passive role, who is penetrated, is labeled with a number of distinct, highly stigmatized terms.
Terms like what?
In Brazilian Portuguese, bicho or viado are the most common terms in Rio, for example. But the specific terms will
vary.
And what
would those words mean in English?
Oh, probably the best way to translate would be queer, faggot, stigmatizing labels that we also have in the United States. But the thing that's interesting there is that label would only be applied to the passive individual in the relationship. An active man wouldn't be stigmatized as a bicha. He's just being an omen, a man.
A guy.
A guy, exactly. And not only that, but a particularly macho guy, because the sign of being macho is having sex with as many people, conquering as many people as you possibly can. It's very much a kind of power question, and the notion of conquering, making a conquest, is typically part of that dynamic.
But you wouldn't be called gay or homosexual, in that light. And but how extensive are we really talking about? Simply a few people in the city, or are we talking about a really common and widespread phenomenon in Brazilian?
No,
life?
I think we're talking about a really common or widespread phenomenon. And it's interesting, you know, you mentioned you wouldn't be called gay, for example, and that's true. It's interesting the way the term gay comes into Brazilian culture. It's imported in from the United States, from North America. But it applies only to extremely effeminate and therefore presumably passive individuals. The people who are most commonly called gay in Brazilian society are the transvestites, who adopt an extremely exaggerated performance of femininity.
Transvestites in Brazil are really a bit different than transvestites in the United States, aren't they? I mean, I remember talking to another anthropologist several years ago, and he said, you know, you really can't tell a really good transvestite in Brazil from a beautiful woman, and that there's a very special role. And there are a lot of transvestites there, you seem to be saying.
Yeah, it's quite an impressive phenomenon, actually. Transvestism is quite widespread. Anyone who spends any amount of time in large Brazilian cities like Rio or São Paulo will certainly come across, particularly in the evening hours, transvestites whose performances are extremely well done in comparison with transvestites anywhere else in the world that I can think of. It's very elaborate, and in making the change from one gender to another, A number of things are done that I think are more it's more intense in Brazil than anywhere I can think of. For example, along with using hormone treatments to change gender, a great deal is done with silicone injections, very, very well done. The fact that Brazil is the one of the great capitals of plastic surgery and transforming the body generally, I think, is all part of the same complex. And the transformation of the body that transvestites undergo in Brazil is really a very impressive thing to see. You know, I live in Copacabana, very near a part of the beach that the transvestites like to frequent. And so during time, you often can see the transformation happening right before your eyes. A young boy will appear near that part of the beach, you know, at the start of the summer, and you will reappear on and off over the course of a year, sometimes more. And suddenly, you can see the hormone treatment starting to be taken, the silicone starting to be injected gradually over time, so that suddenly a year has passed and the young boy has transformed into a young woman. And that process goes on with aging, and a whole series of transformations happens right before your eyes.
Well, a lot of people, probably most people listening, don't have too much experience of transvestites, but there's something else that goes on in Brazil, and it's not simply those people who go through the transformations, but in some sense, during Carnival, the season just at the end of Lent, the season in February, the great four-day party in February, all sorts of people dress in the other sex's clothes. Men wear dresses, and as do women, and their wives often make the dresses for them, and they're not transvestites. So there's something going on. There's what is the word for the clothing you talk about? The fantasia. The clothing itself is called a fantasy, isn't it?
The clothing itself is called a fantasy, and at some level, Carnival is clearly a kind of 4-day cultural fantasy in which the entire society tends to reinvent itself, at least during a given period. It's a kind of ritual of transformation in which it's possible at least for a few days to live out one's fantasies. So the transformations take place in all sorts of ways. Men become women, as you say. The poor become well-to-do. One of the most common images in the samba school parades that are a real focus for the carnival in Rio de Janeiro is for the poorest members of Brazilian society to adopt the fantasias or costumes of extremely well-to-do nobles or rulers from the days of the colony, for example. So everybody transforms themselves at some level. And thinking particularly of transvestism, it's very interesting because there are many different kinds of transvestism or cross-dressing during Carnival. You've got, as you say, men who were, you know, in daily life just kind of average Joes, whose wives help them make their costume, and often it's a very exaggerated, funny kind of vision of femininity with comic breasts and playful images of women as housemaids or what have you. At the same time, you've also got the transvestites who are in fact transvestites in normal daily life, but who use Carnival as an opportunity to take their vision of transvestism to an extreme with much more elaborate costumes of Hollywood vamps and the like.
My guest is Richard Parker. He's an anthropologist who's been living in Brazil. His new book on the sexual culture of Brazil is called Bodies, Pleasures, and Passions. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Richard Parker is my guest. He has lived in Brazil for about a decade and has written a new book called Bodies, Pleasures, and Passions about sexual life in Brazil. Does all of the sexual possibility mean that sexual life is free or freer, that there's no stigma in Brazil, that you can be anything you want and everybody celebrates it and is happy?
No, it definitely doesn't. One of the things that the book really tries to do is look at the contradictions, at the fact that at the very same time that you can have a macho society, a very patriarchal society with a deeply ingrained Catholic ideology that, like other religions, views sexuality with its own particular vision and stigmatizes many expressions of sexuality, at the same time that you have these kinds of conservative views, conservative tendencies, regulating and controlling sexuality, at the same time that that exists, you have this other current that we talked about earlier, a kind of celebration of sensuality as a positive value, okay? And what I think is interesting and important to try and understand, and also difficult to understand, is the fact that these things can exist at the same time, and that people live with those kinds of contradictions in their lives and have to negotiate and navigate their way between such conflicting values.
You've done a lot of work with AIDS since you've been in Brazil. And in a way, it might not seem so surprising that a country that has such complex sexuality and frankly, so much sex that AIDS, it doesn't seem so surprising, AIDS would become a big issue. How does the way in which Brazil deals with AIDS differ from what you see in the North?
On the basis of some of the issues that we've already talked about, it comes as no surprise that the AIDS epidemic in Brazil has been severe, that it continues to be very explosive, and that many of the particular characteristics of Brazilian sexual culture are important in trying to understand the way AIDS has manifest itself in Brazil, as well as the ways in which Brazilian society might try to respond to it. I mean, we've already talked, for example, about the fact that many men who have sex with men don't consider themselves to be gay or homosexual. That's clearly very important in looking at the way that the epidemic has spread, as well as in the way that Brazilian society can respond to it. The earliest cases of AIDS in Brazil were almost all reported in behaviorally homosexual men who had been infected often during periods abroad in the early 1980s. But very rapidly, as AIDS came home to Brazilian soil, if you will, and as HIV transmission began to take place in Brazil itself, the notion of distinct risk groups broke down.
You mean because people don't live or don't stay in the same sexual category, that you can't separate gay from straight? I mean, is this? I remember I spoke to another person who lived a long time in Brazil, and he said, "You know, God knows if there is a heterosexual population in Brazil."
There's a lot of space for fluidity, certainly, and not only for fluidity in terms of bisexual behavior, but also for a fair amount of a change of partners and multiple partners on the part of individuals who are behaviorally heterosexual. So that in a variety of ways, the sexual culture opens up opportunities for HIV transmission that have been very important in the way the epidemic has taken shape there.
Have these sexual behaviors also made a difference in how the country has tried to fight the disease, either in terms of prevention or care or education?
I think they have. On the one hand, clearly, in my opinion, Brazilians at every level, and here I think that you can say this is true of the government as well as civil society, have approached AIDS with less inhibition and less puritanism than has been true, for example, in North America, I think.
There's an interesting program educating construction workers about how to have safe sex while they're away from home. And as I understand it, the program has illustrations and videos showing them how to have sex with men and how to have sex with women so that they don't transmit the disease. Is this true?
Indeed, it's true. That program is one that was developed by the Brazilian Interdisciplinary AIDS Association, ABIA for short. And ABIA, like many of the other NGOs, have developed highly targeted and very innovative AIDS education materials for a number of social groups. Again, the tendency is to not target what we think of as the traditional risk groups, gay men or IV drug users, but to target socially relevant populations like construction workers, civil construction workers who are often migrants who are away from home and the traditional family atmosphere and who may engage in sexual relations with female prostitutes or with others on the construction, other men on the construction site. They also target groups like street children who have a whole set of risk factors, if you will, by virtue of their particular situation. So
you mean they use drugs and they're prostitutes?
They use drugs. They may prostitute. They may have sex between one another, both same-sex and opposite-sex relationships. So there are a variety of questions at issue there. And the population, as you'll see from talking about all of those different risk behaviors, you can't identify them just on the basis of one particular risk activity. So you focus on the population as a significant social population, street kids rather than IV drug users, for example. And that's one way of developing innovative AIDS education materials in Brazil that I think has been particularly effective and needs to be explored more fully.
My guest has been Richard Parker. He's the author of a new book on sexual culture in Brazil. It's called Bodies, Pleasures, and Passions. He also has lived in Brazil for the last 10 years. This is Fresh Air.